Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
But first, we're facing a national infrastructure crisis in water, energy and transport, which will have catastrophic consequences for our economy. They're the words of Sean O'Driscoll, who's a businessman, chair of the ESRI and a member of Ireland's new infrastructure task force. And Sean is here with me in the studio. Good morning to you, Sean.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks for coming in. You're speaking to us today in a personal capacity, let's say that at the outset, but you are on this new infrastructure task force, which was set up by Minister Jack Chambers, and he's the chair of that. So you've a few sobering words for him just as that work gets underway. Is that why you've decided to come out?
Yeah, I think it's time to call out the issues, because it will require very, very tough, brave and exceptional decisions. And the system has to do it. The task force won't be able to do it. And unless the task force gets that commitment, it will just be another task force.
Mm-hmm, a talking shop.
Well, at the time when this task force was announced, there was a lot of comments to the effect that the last thing we need is another task force. I'm part of that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make sure this task force is different.
The reason people did feel it was different was, the CEO of Ishka Éireann is on there, the managing director of the ESB, people like you, and those looking on felt that this was a group of people who can get things done.
Correct. And so all of the people who can make the difference are in the room. But to make the difference will require legislative changes and real tough decisions by government. Those of us in the room, with the exception of our chair, who is Minister Chambers, we're not in a position to make those changes. So we can come up with recommendations. We can come up with an action plan. But an action plan is only so good and will never happen unless there is total government support behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar, in fact, to what I saw firsthand when I was a member of the Action Plan for Jobs back in 2012.
Right, OK. And people might remember the Action Plan for Jobs, and it was a success back then. So tell me what you think some of the problems are. I mean, you say that we are stuck in a pattern of failure when it comes to delivering major public infrastructure.
We have underinvested in our infrastructure for 50 years, and it's been a volatile investment curve. And the first thing we as a country do in an economic downturn is we cut capital spending. And we do that because it's politically expedient to do it. It's the easy option. Cutting day-to-day expenditure is politically difficult. So the easy one to go for is capital expenditure. And that's what we have done historically in every economic downturn. And as a consequence of that, we have underinvested over the last 50 years, and particularly so in the last 10 years.
Have we not addressed that, though? Because we are told by Pascal Donoghue time and again that capital spending, certainly as we look out from here, won't be touched, that money is in the bank now, no matter what we face.
Yeah, the money is there. But what it requires, and this is one of the significant issues around infrastructure is a multi-annual project, and you don't fund it year to year. Our Ishka Éireann, ESB Networks, Airgrid are funded on a year-to-year basis. They require multi-annual funding, which is guaranteed so that they can plan out their infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
They have been calling for this for a long time. It's common sense, it's not rocket science, and we as the task force members will reinforce that. But we need to convince the government that they should provide multi-annual funding to these organisations.
But I mean, you have a direct line to Minister Jack Chambers. I mean, do you get the sense that there's any pushback?
We've had our first meeting.
Yeah.
We've been very clear. We've been very direct. His message to us was very, very simple. Everything is on the table. Nothing is off the table. But we're at the start of the process. We need to put in place an action plan around infrastructure, which we hope to have completed by the first week of July, then for government approval. That's when I will be convinced. When government says this is going to happen, that's when I will be convinced that it is going to happen.
Right, so now let's talk about some of the difficult choices that you think they're going to have to make.
Okay, let's start with planning. We historically have had a two-tier planning system. Local authorities, and then if you wanted to appeal to Ombord Plan Óla, you appeal to Ombord Plan Óla. It's now become a three-tier process because the tier three is the forecourts. And the legal profession has turned this into an industry. And you have
and people have a right to do that, to ask for a judicial review. That's there for them.
Absolutely.
They want to seek that recourse.
But judicial reviews, the bar for getting judicial reviews is far too low. These are not my words. These are the words of Mr. Justice Peter Kelly, the former president of the High Court, who issued a report back in 2021 on judicial reviews. And he and his colleagues on that review said the bar for judicial reviews was too low. I could get a judicial review against you if there's a typographical error, for example, in your submission,
mm-hmm.
or if there's something insignificant omitted. So the bar is too low. Judicial reviews were put in place for a very good reason, but they were not put in place for what they're now being used for.
So you're saying that there should be, your planning application goes into your local authority, and if someone's not happy with that, they appeal to Ombord Plan Óla. If that appeal is rejected, that should be the end of the matter.
No, I'm not saying that as definitive of that. You are entitled to a judicial review, but you should, as per Justice Kelly's report, you should be able to demonstrate to the court that you have a very strong case for success. If you don't, then you shouldn't get a judicial review.
Right, so change the bar. The bar needs to be higher.
Absolutely.
So that's planning. Where else do you see a difficult choice needing to be made?
Then you need joined up thinking across the planning system itself. So if you take a local authority, every local authority under legislation has to prepare a five-year development plan. For their own local authority area. And that's right. That's correct. That's the way it should be done. But that in turn doesn't necessarily get incorporated into the plans of Ishgairn or ESB networks or AirGrid. They're done in isolation
mm-hmm.
and there isn't joined up strategic planning across the entire system. So if I compare that, for example, with the private industry, if you had a group of companies, every company would do a three-year strategic plan or a five-year strategic plan. And all of that is then incorporated into a group three-stroke-five-year
strategic plan. A master plan so that everybody knows what's going on.
Exactly.
But you say that public servants are more scared of the Public Accounts Committee than they are of economic decline. So that's about bureaucracy and stickiness and perhaps inertia at the very top of the government machine. Is that what you're saying?
Our system of government has become risk averse. And the approach is to attempt to eliminate risk. Now, the only way you can eliminate risk is by not taking decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the way to run an enterprise, a business, never mind a country.
But look at the trouble you get in when things go wrong. Like I use the bus shelter now as an example, but when money is wasted in this country, there's an outcry, understandably.
Absolutely right. But what you do with risk is you manage risk. You can never eliminate it. You manage risk. And the consequence of being absolutely risk averse is where we currently find ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am a huge believer in value for money. I always have. And I've always said there's a big difference between value of money and value for money. When I went to college, I knew the value of money because I had very little of it. But I also knew value for money because I made what I had go around a couple of times. So I abhor waste. And the bus shelter example that you gave, or the bike shelter example,
mm-hmm.
they are absolutely scandalous and should never happen. But the issue around risk and management of risk is different to that. Risk is all around us in our personal lives, in our business lives, across government, but risk is there to be managed. And every state organisation now has what's called a risk appetite register. And they are trying to nail it down and nail it down. And the only way you can nail it down is by not taking risk.
Mm-hmm. So you're encouraging government to take more risk in order to reap the reward. What is the reward?
The reward is we can fix our infrastructure and we can fix our housing. Because the housing problem that we have today, a large contributor towards that is the lack of infrastructure.
So do you solve both in tandem? Because people, some might make the argument that you need to do housing first before you do infrastructure. You're saying you can do both simultaneously?
You can do both simultaneously. You cannot fix housing without fixing your infrastructure. So to take a number of examples, I'm not the person who's saying it, but the executives and the organisations are saying it. Ishge Éireann are saying Dublin will have a water supply within 5 years. And that's ever before you build the houses that are required in the next 5 years in Dublin. ESB networks are saying that they do not have sufficient capacity for the houses that are required in Dublin for the next 5 years. So you will never fix the housing crisis without also fixing the infrastructure crisis. And you do both simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. What about this choice we were told by the Secretary General of the Department of the Environment that we're going to have to make between data centres and housing because of demands on our energy infrastructure?
Again, I don't think we can be selective there. We have an industrial policy where we attract foreign direct investment into Ireland. And we've done that very successfully over the last 50 years. This is not a la carte. You cannot attract companies like Apple, Microsoft, Google into Ireland and say to them, we'd like some of your jobs, but we're not going to provide you with data centres. We can provide them with data centres if we invest in our infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if I then turn to renewable energy, we all heard so much from the Green Party about the amount of energy that would be generated from offshore by 2030. And I still hear it. And it is a myth. It won't happen. It isn't happening.
Why not?
Because the investors, a lot of those investors have left town and they've decided Ireland is too difficult a place to do business from a planning perspective. And, you know, if you want to see it in black and white, read the Draghi report of 2023.
On competitiveness across the EU.
And when it comes to delivery of infrastructure for renewable energy, Ireland ranks with Greece 27 out of 27.
Are you laying the blame for that at the Greens, though? Or are you laying the blame for that at the door of the planning and all of the other delays that we have around building major infrastructure?
It's everything, Claire. It's everything. You know, as soon as the last National Development Plan was published and launched, the Green Party was saying most of the roads that were set out in that National Development Plan would not be built. And yet they were party to the government.
Well, there was a 2-for-1, wasn't there, agreement in the programme for government,
yeah,
agreed by the other parties, we should say, where public transport would take precedence over roads. And Fine Gael agreed to that, you know, that was the deal at the time.
They did, but it's part of the reason why we are where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the bypass around Galway, look at how gridlock Galway is, look at the Limerick-Cork Road. There's a small, relatively minor infrastructure road in Cork. It's about 14 kilometres wide, called the North Distribution Route. And the chief executive of Apple wrote to the Taoiseach in January, congratulating him on his appointment or his election as the Taoiseach, but also saying that Ireland needs to invest more in its infrastructure. And specifically, he didn't specify that this is the route that he was speaking about, but it was one of the infrastructure items. If that road was put in place, not only would it solve logistic problems getting into the Apple campus, where there are 6,000 people employed, But it would also open up enough land to build 10,000 homes and three very large industrial sites.
Yeah, because people might be concerned with you saying that, that we're looking at spending a lot of money on infrastructure to satisfy the needs of a billionaire over in the United States. You're saying that the win is twofold, that you keep the jobs and you keep him happy and Apple happy, but you also solve another problem on the housing front.
Yeah, I am saying you solve the problem on the housing front. On the issue of the billionaire in the US, Apple employs 6,000 people in Ireland. They're part of our economic success. They're probably one of the biggest corporation taxpayers in the country. And if they and other large employers in the country call out our infrastructure deficiencies, mm-hmm. we have to take it seriously.
Just going back to what you were saying about energy and the wind-powered energy and offshore in particular, and you said it won't happen, the investors are gone. How then can we say that we're going to provide data centres and energy for housing if that solution, you say, is gone?
It's gone for the moment. But if you make a commitment to build out your infrastructure and give investors certainty, you can attract them back into the country. It's exactly the same when it comes to building our infrastructure. People ask the question, do we have enough capacity? Do we have enough people to build the infrastructure?
Yeah.
Well, you can attract in that capacity into the country if we sort out our planning and if we sort out multi-year financial funding. They are the two key certainty issues that investors cry out for.
Yeah, it sounds like a 10-year plan, at least.
No, you can do a lot of it very quickly. And that is what we're in our task force are hoping to do. We're hoping to come up with 40 or 50 high immediate impact actions. That plan is to be published in July, and there will be a timeline where there will be a traffic light system put in place mm-hmm. to move them from red into amber into green. And we actually want to work ourselves out of our role as a task force as soon as possible. I certainly haven't 10 years to be sitting, you know, on a task force.
Right, but you want to make sure that the work that you do doesn't end up as a dust gatherer.
Absolutely.
Somewhere.
Correct.
Listen, in that piece in the Irish Examiner today, where you've been speaking about all of this, you mention Uisce Éireann as well. And we know that the Shannon pipeline is something that has been hanging around for a long time, helping with the problems with water supply on the East Coast by using water for the Shannon. A lot of people very unhappy about that. I mean, the estimate, the cost estimate is up to $6 billion for 170 kilometres of pipeline. Do you think that that's a realistic cost, first of all, for that project?
I don't know what the cost is, mm-hmm. Claire, and I'm not going to speculate on whether it's a realistic cost. All I know is that 50 years ago, and I said this in the Irish Examiner piece today, 50 years ago, we built a gas pipeline from Kinsale to Dublin to bring gas to the city of Dublin and then to satellite towns around Dublin. We were able to do that 50 years ago. Why aren't we able to do it with water today? Now, if we don't do it, our capital city will have a water crisis within 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
Uisce Éireann are saying it.
I don't know how you square, though, riding roughshod over the rights of homeowners and farmers and people who are earning their living off the land, who have a huge problem with what that's going to do to their livelihoods. Is that what you're saying we should do? That you now need to cooperate with this for the greater good, leaving the self behind?
I am a huge fan of the farming community. I come from farming stock myself.
So you know then the impact that this will have on some people.
I do. However, I also believe as a society, as a democratic society, common good must always prevail over individual mm-hmm. rights. And a minority of people make a lot of noise. And that, you know, that is what we're talking about here. A very small number of people make a lot of noise, run down to the four courts to get a judicial review and are supported by the legal system, who are prepared to take their cases on a no-fault, no-fee basis.
As they're entitled to do.
Well, except I think that is wrong.
Okay, and you're entitled to that view, Sean. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for coming in. Sean O'Driscoll there, who is chair of the ESRI and also a member of Ireland's new infrastructure task force. Right, coming up next, we're going to get the latest on the rising tensions and ongoing conflict between Iran and Israel.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.